Good morning and welcome back to Kelly's Chronicles. I am Chris Kelly on Soft Rock 102.5 KEZK. He has been with us before. His first book was entitled Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. And now he has another book out. He is a sought-after speaker. He's also a coach, call him a motivational speaker. His name is Mike Robbins. He's a former pro baseball player with the Kansas City Royals, and he's happily living out in the San Francisco Bay Area. New book out called Be Yourself Because Everyone Else is Already Taken. I love that. You just told me before we got on the air this was not your own creation, the title.
Yeah, actually, when I was writing Focus on the Good Stuff, I found a quote from the famous Oscar Wilde, and he said, "Be yourself, everyone else is already taken." So I love the quote. It's not one of his more famous ones, and I've been quoting him in my workshops and speeches and all over the place. And every time I would mention the quote, people would laugh, or they, you know, just such a poignant reminder, and it turned into a new book for me, all about the power of authenticity.
You started out, well, you had your focus on sports. Tell us a little bit, if you can. Tell our audience what happened.
Well, my whole life was all about baseball, and I was fortunately pretty good at it. I got drafted by the New York Yankees out of high school. Didn't end up signing with the Yankees because I got an opportunity to play baseball at Stanford University, which was a pretty cool experience. Got to pitch in the College World Series there. Then I got drafted by the Kansas City Royals, signed a pro contract, went into the minor leagues of Kansas City, was doing well, working my way up to the big leagues. Unfortunately, my third season in the minors with Kansas City, I went out to pitch one night, threw one pitch, tore ligaments in my elbow, and blew my pitching arm out. And my baseball career came to an end when I was just 23 years old. So as I write a lot about in my first book, Focus on the Good Stuff, as well as mention a number of times in the new one, Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken, it was difficult for me, but ultimately one of the greatest things ever happened to me because it taught me a lot about life. And a lot about being able to appreciate myself and what I'm doing as I'm doing it instead of after the fact. Because my big regret when my career ended wasn't even that I didn't make it. It was that I hadn't fully appreciated it while it was happening. So for the last almost 10 years, I've been traveling around and talking at schools and churches and working within corporations and really teaching the principles of appreciation as well as authenticity, which is what this new book is about. And you know, a lot of what I teach is from my experience as an athlete and my experience in business, and then over the last 10 years of coaching and training and working with people, you know, what I've learned and heard from a lot of people as well as my own life about how we really can be more not only successful but fulfilled in our lives and our relationships. And authenticity, again, is what this new book is all about, really is kind of a core element in everything that I teach and what I try to practice in my own life.
So authenticity, you write in the cover of the book, it's a buzzword.
Yes.
Be true to yourself and be your real self.
Yeah. So, you know, it's become this buzzword, which I'm happy about. I mean, look, let's just take a look at the most recent presidential campaign. On both sides, there was a big buzz about authenticity, right? Barack Obama, hey, he's this young, authentic, kind of real guy was the idea, the way that he was packaged, if you will, and John McCain was driving the Straight Talk Express, you know. And so I think in general, whether we're talking about politics or business or just life in general, people are more and more interested, at least on a certain level, on a surface level, in authentic, real. Now, as we go a little deeper, though, this is what I found in my own experiences, it's not that easy to be authentic. We haven't really been trained to be real. You know, the whole first third of the book, I talk about why it's hard to be authentic and share a lot of examples from my own life, and I interviewed a lot of people for this book, and you know, we get scared. We want people to like us. We want to get the job. We want to, you know, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. We're on a first date. We're trying to make a good impression. We're, you know, right now, especially in a lot of the companies I'm working in, people are so scared about losing their jobs. The last thing they think to do is really speak up to the boss or ask for what they want. They're just happy to have a job or whatever. So there's a lot of factors that play into it being difficult, even though all of us say we want people to be honest with us, be real, be open, be, you know, genuine. We get all up in arms when, you know, we find out someone lied. But I think we got to start telling the truth to ourselves that, you know, a lot of us aren't walking around being fully ourselves all the time.
You know, I can just understand the fear factor. There's been a lot of that in, well, how many businesses do we want to go into? The
sure.
Banking industry, the lending industry,
yep.
The car industry. We saw, we saw the bank and the car industry just this past week go under.
Yep.
And also in many industries, whether it be in manufacturing, service, in broadcasting. I mean,
yep.
Our business, since we last spoke, our business has changed again,
yes.
Mike, and it's changed kind of in a scary way, but also an exciting way. But
yep.
here we are. I'm just kind of cruising along saying, okay, dear God, if it was meant to be, it is, and let's
yep.
keep moving forward. And you talk a lot, like you said in the first part of the book, about fear factor. And I think, you know, fear is a lousy motivation, first
right.
of all. Would you not agree with that?
Well, I think it is when we allow it to take over our lives. Here's the ironic sort of paradox about fear. You know, one of the principles, the first part of the book, I really challenge people to take a look at why it's difficult for them to be authentic, and fear is probably the biggest reason, but do it in a way that's compassionate, empathetic, not judgmental towards ourselves or others. It's just part of being human. As I go into the five principles of authenticity in the book, principle number two is actually transform your fear. And I don't mean get rid of it or pretend it's not there. What I actually advocate that people do, and I've been coaching people for years to do this, is to lean more into their fear. Yes, it's a lousy motivator if we let it take over our lives, but the reality is it's as natural and normal as any other human emotion. And I think as a culture, most of us learn how to manage our fear, or more like mask our fear, as a way to get by in life. But that ends up being incredibly stressful, because we're walking around all day long sort of trying to never let them see us sweat, when really we're sweating a lot and just pretending that we're not. And if we can start to get more comfortable with being scared and expressing our fear, it'll actually start to dissipate, even though that seems somewhat counterintuitive initially.
Think about it. If you had to go to work every day,
mm-hmm.
and the first thing when you walked into the office is, how am I going to impress today? Or
yep.
how much money am I going to make today?
Yep.
What's my strategy today for going to be making some money today?
Yep.
You know, as opposed to the guy that's working at the post office doing construction work or at the dry cleaners.
Well, and that's, look, I mean, the reality is that some of us, and you know, mm-hmm. find ourselves in a situation where what we do for a living mm-hmm. is very much production-oriented. We're in sales. We have our own businesses, right? Like what I do
mm-hmm.
is very production-oriented. And then there's other people who have certain jobs, or the way they make their living isn't so. I mean, we all have to produce and get stuff done, but it may not mean, you're right, the guy that works at the dry cleaner, if it's not his business, as long as he has a job and the lights are still on, still able to feed his family or whatever. And so, you know, again, the circumstances of our lives are all unique to some degree, but some of the components of being human, I think, and I've seen this just in my own life, traveling around all over the country and at different parts around the world, speaking to people, you know, what it is to be human. And a lot of what we go through as human beings, I think, without oversimplifying it, is fundamentally the same. And, you know, we spend a lot, I mean, the irony is my book is all about us being ourselves, being the unique expression of who we are. But the paradox of that is that when we really get down to it, we're way more alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm.
And as we start to share more, this is why I really advocate that people get more real, more vulnerable, more transparent about fear and doubt and anything else. Because when we do that, it's amazing that people are like, you feel like that too? You know, one of the things I talk about in the book from my baseball experience, all those years of playing, my favorite day of the baseball season, as odd as this may sound, was the last day. As much as I loved playing, I loved the last day, even though it was usually bittersweet because we often would lose on the last day. Unless you, you know, won the championship, the last game was a loss. And while I didn't like losing, what I appreciated was, A, the pressure was off because the season was over. So it was like, whew, I could take a breath, right? Second thing, and the thing I appreciated even more, was that sometimes, and this happened when I was a kid playing t-ball all the way up through playing professional baseball, is some of the guys, not everyone and not every year, but some of the guys would break down and cry. And no one made a big thing about it. You know, it was usually very private. Guys would sit in their locker, put their glove over their face, or sort of try to play it off. Because, you know, we'd all been trained, boys don't cry, and crying wasn't something, you know, right? There's no crying in baseball, as Tom Hanks made famous in that movie, A League of Their Own. But when the guys would cry, and I would cry sometimes myself, and sometimes it'd be even the toughest guys on the team, I always felt like I wasn't crazy, because I'd look at them and go, oh, they're human too. They have feelings and fears and doubts, and they get sad, and you know what I mean? It was just this, like, very human moment that even as an 8-year-old kid, there was something about that that I really appreciated, because it was real.
But wouldn't you agree, when you're in a situation like that, you don't even think about not crying? It just happens. It's a physiological release, and you cry.
And that's, you know, to me, look, I mean, of course, we have to kind of make our way through life and figure out some of the social norms and all that stuff. But one of the things that I like about intense environments like that, you know, the emotion just comes out. Being with, you know, I have a 3-year-old little girl and a 9-month-old. One of the things I love about my 3-year-old, she is so passionate. You know, and to the point where, of course, there's times it's not what we want her to be doing, throwing a fit in the middle of the grocery store or whatever, but it hasn't been trained out of her yet, for better or worse, that she just expresses herself whenever she feels whatever she feels, it comes out. And there's something that's really beautiful about that. You know, the same could be said, as odd as it sounds, I write a lot about this in the introduction of Be Yourself, Everyone Else Has Already Taken, is at funerals and memorial services. Now, I've always actually been really intrigued by and even liked, as strange as that may sound, memorials and funerals. Not because I'm excited about someone dying. It's often very painful. I've had some really painful losses in my life. But the thing that I appreciate about the space that's created kind of around the death or the, you know, rituals that we tend to go through in our culture when someone dies is the rules change and it puts life in perspective. And I think most of us are all of a sudden hit upside the head, especially if it's someone dies we're not expecting them to. We stop for a moment and go, wait a minute, what am I doing? And that's part of it. In some way, you know, we were talking about the economy and the impact of the economy on so many of us, directly or indirectly, I think it's kind of like a big death, if you will. It's the death of life and business as we've known it. And it is scary because we don't know exactly what's coming next or when it's going to turn around or how it's going to impact us and our families and our savings. And that's real. I mean, I understand the legitimacy of people's concern. But I think similar to when someone dies, there's a transformation that can take place. And if we can kind of go a little deeper right now and say, wait a minute, what can I learn from what's happening? How can I take this as an opportunity for me to pause and really reevaluate my life, what I do, why I do it, how important money and material things are? And I'm not advocating that we all, you know, sell our belongings and, you know, move out to the middle of nowhere. But what I do think we all can do is stop for a second and go, isn't this interesting? You know what I mean? Like, there must be something bigger going on that I think we can take away from this. And I don't know about you, but I have found that this last 6 or 8 months, while my business has definitely been impacted, it's been an incredible time of growth and opportunity for me personally, as well as so many people I know, if we're willing to engage in a more real inquiry about it instead of just complaining about how bad it is. That's not going to get us anywhere.
As a society, people do not like to talk about death because if you think of the word itself, it just sounds yucky, doesn't it? It sounds dark. It sounds horrible. It's like, ugh, you know, it ends in a duff, you know.
Yes.
It's just the word itself. It's like onomatopoeia. It is what it is.
Yes.
But if you look at it, like with your case, you know, you had the opportunity, and I say this with all the love from my heart, to be with your father at his last breath. What a beautiful thing. Because
it really felt like a privilege. Like, I remember thinking, wow, he was here when I came in. I got to be with him when he left. And I think, again, the larger lesson for people listening, you know, whether you've experienced death directly or not, I think the greatest fear that most of us have that we don't talk about is our own fear of dying. I had my mentor say two things to me a bunch of years ago that really stuck with me. The first thing he said to me was, Mike, if you could live your life more aware of your own death every day, you would live differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the challenge was not to be so scared of it, but like to realize that as a reality and live today. You know, it's a cliche, but live like it's your last day. But what if we really did live like that? We would say and do stuff. That's what authenticity is about. It's about, hey, let me express myself. I don't know how much time I got around here, so let me just say and do what it is I really want to. And then the second thing he said was, he said, Mike, you're living your life as though you're trying to survive it, and you got to remember, no one ever has.
Sometimes, you have to step out of yourself and step back, or maybe step to the side, and just kind of view things from a different point of view.
Yep.
To get back in, you know, not to say to get back in the game, but just to get back to what suits you. I mean, it's like grieving in itself. Everybody has their own way of grieving.
Yes.
And I don't know. I believe people have their own comfort zone for grief. And, you know, what comes out for you or what comes out for your wife or what comes out for your coworker is different than what comes out for the next person.
Absolutely. You know? And it's tricky because, like so many things in life, we project how we do it onto other people and expect other people to do it the same way. You know, another example that I'm faced with on a daily basis is parenting. You know, and my wife and I are relatively new parents with little ones at home, but, you know, everyone's got an opinion and a judgment and a perspective, and it's great. And then sometimes it's really annoying, you know, but it's like, what if we could be more free and open sharing, but not judging and sort of putting our stuff on other people, if you will. And I think underneath it, one of my theories about why everyone has it, not everyone, but many of us have a tendency to be so critical and judgmental as it relates to parenting is because we're all scared we're doing it wrong.
Well, there's no directions.
Exactly. And I think that even the people who are really fantastic parents or they've, you know, had kids and grandkids and the whole bit, right? At some level, it would be odd to me if you didn't stop and think, am I screwing this kid up? What the heck am I doing? You know, that's a very normal, common thing. And what we often do in our culture, and this happens at work, this happens in our relationships. You know, you and I were talking about grief. The things that are the most sensitive and that we're the most insecure about tend to be the things that we're then the most judgmental and critical about with other people, because the judgment really isn't about others, it's about ourselves. And one of the things that I talk a lot about throughout the whole course of my book is for us to just start telling the truth in a vulnerable and transparent and somewhat brutally honest way with ourselves, not as a judgment or criticism, but just as a reality that, you know what, most of us, we're just doing the best we can in every moment. And if we're really honest, we don't really know what the heck's going on. And that's one of the things that, whether it's a death or the economy turning down significantly or something happening, what it reminds all of us of is we really don't have a whole heck of a lot of control over life, even for those of us, myself included, who like to be pretty anal and organized and planning and all that stuff. Like, this thing is just a mystery. And the more we can actually sort of, you know, celebrate that and embrace that, mm-hmm. the easier the ride gets. You know, another cliche or metaphor that I love, though, is like putting your hands up on the roller coaster and just enjoying the ride instead of trying to figure out, when's it going to go down? When's it going to go up? When's it going to turn? Am I going to be okay? You know, it's like we all get to ride this crazy thing called life, but we ride it how we want to, and then that has a lot to do with our experience of life.
Yeah, I agree. Although roller coasters kind of scary.
I hear you. Me too. It depends on which way they turn. There's some I like and some I don't. Pick the metaphor you want, right? But the idea is to like take our hands off the wheel. Like we're gripping so tight. And here's the thing, how this relates to right now. It's counterintuitive because of the level of fear that a lot of us are experiencing. But the more we can actually trust right now in the midst of the uncertainty, the better off we're going to be. Because the reality is, at some level, and I'm not trying to minimize what people are going through, we're going to get through this. Individually, collectively, we are. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of life. You know, life keeps going on. We keep evolving and moving forward. The question is, like with anything, and anyone who's listening who's going through a tough time, whether it's financially related or not, you will get to the other side. We always do. The problem is when we're in the midst of it, it's like when you get the flu. You know how when you get the flu, and you've had it before, but you think to yourself, especially now, you know, we're all paranoid, swine flu and whatever, right? We think, is this the one that's going to do me in? You know, you start having that thought, like, maybe I'll never get better, even though it's totally irrational at some level. I mean, it's possible, but we've been sick before, we get better. But there's a moment in the middle of it that we doubt and we worry it might not get better. It's the same thing when we get depressed. It's the same thing when times are tough. But we got to remember at some level the great saying, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And ironically, and not to be sort of a buzzkill, but it's the same when things are going great, too. If we can keep it in perspective and realize, hey, this too shall pass as well. Enjoy it right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think we could sort of not take ourselves so seriously and in the process be more real.
If you're just waking up, I'm Chris Kelly. This is Kelly's Chronicles. We're talking to Mike Robbins, who has just written a book that is out called Be Yourself. Everyone else is already taken. And we're talking about the power of authenticity. And at the end of the book, you talk about something that is so important. And I'm not going to give it away, but here's the scenario. Here we are, husband and wife, and there's been an argument.
Yes.
And the argument has gone on for a good 5 or 6 minutes, and now it's got way out of hand.
Yes.
Because what we originally wanted to discuss and talk about and have a conversation about has turned into something that is hair-raising.
Yep.
And my blood pressure's going up, and I just feel like garbage. I
yep.
feel terrible.
Yep.
I mean, I think most people, when they get really upset and their blood pressure's up there and they're just, you know, they're angry, you know, something has been biting at them for a long time. But anyway, so we've sure. had this argument now for 5 or 6 minutes.
Yep.
And so, you know, you might go walk out to the patio and, I don't know, maybe I go down the basement and throw in some laundry or something.
Right.
And we need to chill out, right? Because mm-hmm. when two people are angry, they... if nothing gets done, you
yeah.
can't really have a conversation. At least
right.
I don't think so. But one thing you talk about in your book is the power or the benefits of forgiveness.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we are. We're husband and wife. And I'm sure our audience that's listening right now, they've gone through this scenario.
Oh, sure.
Even if they're not married with a member of their family or, you know, a date or, you
yeah.
know, a boyfriend, whatever, a girlfriend. Somebody has to be the first to sit down and say, hey, let's talk about this.
Yes.
So they have to be you know, like the commissioner, if you will,
right,
and say, let's talk. I'm sorry. I mean, when you're a kid and you do something wrong or something that's not right and your parent says, hey, you go say you're sorry. You say, I'm sorry, and everything's okay. But as adults, it seems like we want to hang on to it.
Sure.
Because you own it.
But, sure.
But then I think as you get older, you realize, you know what? I don't want to own this because this feels yucky.
Yep.
I want to say, Mike, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And then it releases. And now you and I have a chance to talk again. And
yes,
it opens the gate.
Absolutely. And
okay,
look, this is,
so, there
it's
we go.
A tough one. I mean, I can tell this is a big one for you. It's a big one for me. It's right. It's, and a lot of people listening, you know, the thing about conflict in, you know, and we're talking about this in the context of a love relationship with our spouse or significant other, or it could, as you said, it could be family or coworker or friend. We have this crazy notion, I think, that somehow we shouldn't have conflict, like it's bad. I really want to challenge people to change that perspective. Conflict isn't good or bad. It's just natural. If you don't have any conflict, by the way, in your relationships, be very concerned because someone is selling out, or both people are, in a relationship where there's no conflict. Now, this does not mean we need to pick fights and be nasty to each other, and right? But one of the things we can practice, and I advocate really strongly in my book, Be Yourself, Everyone Else Is Already Taken, is to start to learn how to engage consciously in conflict. And the reality is there's only two ways to deal with a conflict, either directly all the way through until it gets resolved. Not you win or get your way, but gets resolved, meaning both people are left feeling validated, complete, and like it's over, whatever the end ultimate outcome is of the, right? But see, we live in this you win, someone else loses society. I mean, right, turn on the news, listen to it's like everyone's litigating everybody, one side's who's right, who's wrong, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of, you know, you watch all the cable news, it's about the left arguing with the right. And so that's in our consciousness, this sort of duality of right and wrong, which in a lot of cases, there are some things in life when we get into it with our significant other or people that it's very clearly black and white. But most things that we're talking about, there's a lot of gray in there. So the thing is, so we can deal with the conflict directly all the way through, or the other way is to let it go. And I don't mean just like not talk about it, that's mm-hmm. avoiding it, but actually choose, consciously choose to let it go, which all of us, by the way, have done literally hundreds of thousands of times in our life with many things. We just don't think about the stuff we let go. We think about the stuff we hang on to. So as it relates to our spouse or, you know, an argument that we get into, it can be tough. But the thing about apologizing and forgiving, it doesn't mean agreeing or condoning. What it does mean, though, is choosing to be loving, choosing to be open. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that we have to be nicey-nice all the time. I mean, sometimes what's authentically true for me is that I'm angry with my wife. And my wife and I both actually, as relatively, quote, nice people, one of the things we challenge each other to do in a loving way, as best as we can, is get mad at each other when we're mad. Because that's a very healthy, normal thing. And it's not about nasty and yelling and screaming and throwing things. No, but it's about, I'm angry right now. And if we can own the anger and express it, it's like any other emotion. We will move through it. See, the thing is, we've had this idea that all these things are bad, when in reality, if we can engage in them consciously, they can be incredibly positive. You know, Michelle, my wife, often said to me, right, you know, early on in our relationship when we'd have different arguments and we were still really kind of feeling each other out about how do we do this dance of being together, and our personalities are very different. But she would say to me all the time, angry's fine, mean's not okay, right?
Oh.
And what I realized for me is because when I would finally allow myself to get angry, and this is something for a lot of people who are listening who are, quote, nice people who can relate to this, to get angry is actually kind of scary for a lot of us, right? It's like, oh, boy, I don't want to upset someone. I don't want someone to be mad at me kind of thing. And what would happen for me is that I wouldn't say anything, and then finally I would kind of have it all come out, and then the thing that happened was something little, but it was all this anger that I had been suppressing, right?
Yeah.
And this is a very common phenomenon. So the thing is that we sometimes think we have to then get really mad about it or get really angry about it in order to justify being angry, when in reality, if we can start to practice, one of the techniques that I teach couples, and I lay it out in detail in the book, is a technique called clearing withholds. So what it means is you do this with a spouse. I've done this with corporate groups I sit down with. I've done this with friends and business partners. But Michelle, my wife, and I do it. I do it with a lot of couples that I coach. It means you literally proactively sit down. It doesn't mean there's a fight or a conflict already in place, although there may be. And here's how it goes. I'll say to Michelle, there's something I've withheld from you. And her response is, okay, would you like to tell me? And then I say, yes, and I say whatever it is. And the practice, the technique is her response, no matter what I say, is just to say thank you, so that it's safe for us to put stuff out on the table initially. Now, at the end of it, we go back and forth with this for a while. We may say, well, I really want to talk about that one. I noticed I got a little upset, or whatever, and then we'll talk about it. But a lot of the stuff, when you just put it out there and the other person actually listens without getting defensive, it's amazing what stuff can get resolved just by saying, I've been withholding this. And the little stuff, the little annoying things around the house that I wish you would pick up your this and how come you don't do that or blah, blah, blah. Those things get put out on the table in a safe way before they turn into big, nasty fights that we haven't been dealing with for months or years at a time.
It's interesting. A few weeks ago, I went to a healing circle on a Sunday afternoon. And you are given, there were 9 or 10 of us, and you are given time to speak. And it's about, two and a half minutes, maybe, whatever, 3 minutes. And the rules were, because there were a couple of common rules, and we are in a circle together, and you do not make a judgment. You do not speak when the other person is speaking.
Yep.
Basically, it was teaching you about unconditional love and healing.
Yeah.
And something like that, I thought, well, this is kind of appropriate. Maybe this could be incorporated into the office somehow.
Absolutely. Well, and it's such a great, because a lot of times, and I've learned this over the years coaching people, in a lot of times the best thing, we can do this with our spouses, with our children, the best thing we can do sometimes is literally just hear where people are. No judgment, no advice, no nothing. Just genuinely, not like I hear you, but really be there with them, witness them, experience whatever they're going through the best you can. And in the process of doing that, a lot of times people work stuff out for themselves. There's something so powerful about just being heard and seen and not judged and not messed with and not, given advice to. And the other thing you can do with, and this is a great one with your spouse, and for many men like me who have a tendency to want to fix everything, right? That's the stereotypical thing that a lot of us as guys do, is to actually, I'll ask Michelle, okay, babe, before you get into this, just let me know. Do you want me to just listen or do you want any feedback? Right? And what's great is then she'll tell me beforehand, and that helps me listen in a particular way without any real particular agenda. And that's the kind of thing, the more honest we can be with our coworkers, with our friends, our family members, our spouses about, here's what supports me. Here's what I need from you. And those, as simple as those conversations sound like, they're actually kind of hard and sometimes a little vulnerable to have. But that's one of the biggest things that we can do to be bold, as I talk about one of the principles in my book, is to actually ask for the support that we need, and say, here's what I need right now, or even be willing to tell someone in a loving way, listen, your advice, while it may be great, is not going to help me right now. I just need to be listened to. I just need to be hugged. I just need to be whatever.
Right.
And that's totally appropriate to tell people. And the more we're willing to do that, the more likely we create an environment, whether it's at work or at home or at church or anywhere else around us, that's really nurturing and loving for everyone, because we give everyone permission. Hey, let's give each other some real feedback so that we all get the support that we really want and need. One of the things, I was just having a conversation earlier today, actually, about this phenomenon as it relates to parenting. And the conversation was such that they were talking about one of the best things you can do as a parent is to let your children know, hey, you know what? I've never done this before. Like, particularly with your oldest, right? I've never been the father of a 3-year-old. I've never been a father of a 15-year-old, whatever, mother of a... And not as a cop-out, but just to remind, I think it's such a great example, and this can happen whether you have children or not. We spend a lot of time and energy trying to act like we know what we're doing in a lot of situations when we don't. Well, and one of the best things we can do for ourselves and everyone else around is just to admit, you know what? I'm not sure what to do here.
Well, and I think you'll find as your children get older that when that situation occurs, you'll all be laughing at each other and yourselves, and that'll be the fun part.
Exactly, because, how the heck are we supposed to know how to do this?
Right.
Every day in life, we're presented with stuff we've never dealt with before, and even with the stuff that we, quote-unquote, should know, every day is different. And if we could take ourselves a little less seriously and have a little more freedom to realize, you know what? I don't really know what's going on. I'm doing the best I can, and I just screwed that up, or whatever it may be. Again, not as a cop-out, not as a throw in the towel, I'm not going to really give my best effort and go for it, but as a genuine way of, I think most of us are walking around relatively full of it and faking it in life, hoping that no one notices, when if we
can
just admit it, it liberates everyone else, and we all go, good, thank God I can stop doing that too, and then we can get more real.
We got to go, Mike, but the book is called Be Yourself. Everyone Else Is Already Taken. And a lot of talk about the power of authenticity. Mike, where can people find your book?
Well, the book's available almost everywhere in bookstores. The best place to get it, I think, though, is online at beyourselfbook.com, because not only can you get the book for a discount there, but a lot of other great authors and speakers partnered with me on the recent launch. And so when you get the book, you also get free audio downloads from people like Wayne Dyer and Jack Canfield and other cool folks like that. So beyourselfbook.com is the best place.
And if you ever make it to the Midwest, the mighty Midwest, let us know.
I will. I spent a little time when I was playing ball in Springfield, Illinois, not too far from St. Louis, so I have a soft spot in my heart for St. Louis and that part of the country.
Well, the Cards are doing okay right
yes.
now, so that's good news.
Well, and the good news is you guys have some of the greatest fans in the whole world. So,
yeah. And if you want, you know, I don't have a ticket for you, but you can always come to the All-Star game.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Mike Robbins, thank you so much for being on Kelly's Chronicles.
Thanks for having me again.